Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and today we're going to talk about what it costs to live, especially if you are a young graduate who's just starting to work. This is a conversation that I actually was having with today's guest, Kirsty Scully, who's a financial planner. And Kirsty has young graduates coming to her wanting to make the most of their paychecks. And what she has discovered is that the cost of living is real. A young graduate may feel like they've just got this massive windfall after being a student, but actually not so much. So welcome, Kirsty.
Thank you. Thanks, Maya. Yeah, it's actually absolutely frightening when you break it down and what the costs are. I mean, I sometimes wonder how youngsters really do manage. And I mean, I've got my own son in his 20s. I have a very, very good understanding of the cost of living for young graduates. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start off with what a graduate kind of typically is earning. And I just want to frame the conversation we're going to have so people listening understand, you know, the income levels we're talking about. So we're saying somebody, maybe they're a BCom graduate. And I had a quick look, Kirsty. I went to check what does a young BCom graduate earn? And they're looking at about 25 to 30,000 a month cost to company. So what, after tax, 26,000 Rand a month, I think. And then postgrad. So if you're a qualified CA or you have a very specialist degree, maybe you can be earning up to sort of 50,000 Rand a month, maybe. So after tax, about 41,000. So let's start with that as a base. Okay. That's, we're looking at anywhere from 26,000 a month to 41,000 Rand a month, but whatever you're earning, you're going to have basic expenses. So what are those basic expenses, Kirsty, going to look like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got to start with obviously where you're going to live. I mean, I know I always say to people, stay at home with mom and dad as long as possible because it's the cheapest place to stay. But realistically, yes, it's time to move out. It's time to grow up. It's time to start thinking about purchasing your own place. So whether it's a case of you're actually going to be renting for a while or whether you're going to actually buy your own place, the point is it's going to cost you something to live there. And you know, maybe you buy yourself a place, say a little two-bedroom place and it costs you it's 1.5 million Rand. You are looking at a bond repayment of probably somewhere around 16,000 Rand a month for that. That is a huge amount of money.
I mean, if you're sitting on 26,000 Rand a month, you know, home ownership on your own is not really going to work. So I also want to look at home ownership and how we can go about getting that for the young graduate. But what, I mean, rent, what are we looking at rent if you're renting? Yeah. 10,000 Rand?
I would say generally about 10,000. If you're going to share with somebody, it's going to be cheaper. You can, if I think of people that I know sort of sharing at about 7,000 or 8,000 Rand a month, they're doing that. Maybe if you're really going a little bit smaller, maybe less facilities, you could probably get it in a shared sort of flat at 5,000 Rand a month. Mm. You could, but not all that much less. And then of course there's other expenses. You've got to be paying for the electricity. Maybe that's 1,000 Rand a month. For some people, even more, maybe closer on 2,000, generally speaking, at least 1,000 Rand. Mm. And then, of course, you've got to eat. So what is it going to cost to eat? What is it going to cost for your Wi-Fi, your fiber? What is it going to cost for your fuel, for buying a car? There's numerous things that we can be looking at. And certainly, you know, there are a lot of things that you need to come up with and come up with the finances for that. So, and a lot of those things, it is going to vary from person to person as to what it costs. But I would say there are some sort of really middle of the range sort of costing that I've already suggested and that it's going to cost you. But
well, let's have a look. So I think you suggested sort of maybe 10,000 Rand rent. Again, you can try and get that down. Food, maybe 2.5 a month. Electricity and water, 1,000. You're watching your electricity there. Entertainment, maybe 1,500. Fuel or transport, 2,000 Rand a month. We haven't even bought a car yet, by the way.
Yeah.
I think you've added in a haircut, 200 Rand, a cell phone, 300 Rand. That's very low, by the way. I think for a lot of people, they're spending more. So that just, I added up your numbers there, Kirsty, and that's already at 17,500. So we're talking 17,500 Rand just for the basics. And we haven't spoken about the car. So, you know, car finance, I looked at an entry-level car, second-hand entry-level car, 150,000 Rand, your little Swift, for example. You're still looking at, if you're paying it off over the maximum 72 months, you're still looking at 3,500 Rand a month plus insurance. So call it 4,500 Rand a month. Add that on and you're now at about 22,000 Rand.
Yeah. So interesting you talk about insurance because I actually did some figures just the other day. I realized that, in fact, it was in my own situation. I was trying to see about the cost of insurance for my son's car, and it was much cheaper for me to insure his car through my home insurance because it was all the other things that came with it, and for him to go and just take our car insurance on itself. So maybe that's something that in the very beginning that a young graduate could perhaps do is actually just get the insurance done through their parents' main insurance, but they still pay for it, just pay them. That's one of the ways that you can actually consider reducing insurance. So there's one example.
So I think that's an important point because, of course, the insurers are going to say who's the main driver. So we've done the same thing with my son, but we have him as the main driver. We have him as registered at because he's at university, but we just will pay a much higher excess if he has an accident. So the premium is maybe not as high, but, you know, we're really hoping he doesn't crash the car because the excess is very high for a young person.
You certainly benefit because, especially, for example, if the parents have maybe a bigger home and that sort of thing, so they're paying maybe a couple of thousand rand a month in insurance, it's going to definitely work out cheaper for them to insure the car than for the person to be insuring it themselves. But, of course, we all strive for our independence when we're in our 20s. That's what we want. Mm. We want that independence. But, yes, independence does cost us money.
Live at home and get your parents to pay for the car insurance, but maybe not. Maybe your parents will object to all of this. Or many people don't have parents who can support them, and they're having to do it on their own. And I think this car thing is very, very key. I mean, think about it. We're on 22,000 rand a month, right, at the moment, with rent, food, and car repayments and insurance. You know, if you're earning what we said 26,000, so you're the BCom graduate, you know, you're already coming up close to it. But even if your take home pays 40,000 because you're now an actuary or you've got a really big qualification, you can't go off and suddenly spend 400,000 rand on a car.
You can't. You can't. And that is why, ideally, what you want to do is get your first car somehow, whether you're fortunate enough that maybe your mom and dad can actually give you a car. Otherwise, you can just get that smallest car just to get you from A to B for a few years. Then the deal is that what you need to be doing is not now sitting back and saying, oh, I've got a car. I don't have to save anything. I always try and encourage my clients to say, well, even though you're not paying a car on a monthly basis, still put away whatever, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 rand a month for the next car so that when you buy the next car, you buy it cash. If you can start buying your cars cash because you've saved for a couple of years towards them, you are not wasting all that money on interest in the repayments that come. So it really is ideal. Of course, that is difficult because what it does involve is having the first car as a start. Because let's face it, we live in a country where you need to have private, you know, you need to have your own car. It's not all that suitable to be using public transport.
Absolutely. But I think I agree with you completely. You need a car. You don't need the car, right?
And it's absolutely
that choice. And I see it in so many young people. They feel so excited. They're getting a salary and all of this. And they start looking. They've had their mind on a car for a while. They know exactly what they're going to buy. And it's actually that car that puts them under so much financial pressure. So, yes, we're putting in a car in this budget, but we're going in at 150,000 rand entry level, secondhand Swift kind of car, right? So we're not blowing out. But now we've spoken about the basic expenses. We've included car finance in there for people who will have to buy a car because they don't have, you know, public transport is a challenge. But then what about saving for important financial things, your future, your retirement, insurance? What would somebody, a young graduate, be looking at for that?
Yeah. So, of course, what I did just before we came into the meeting, I quickly did some numbers to actually just get a good idea. And I worked on a 25-year-old, okay, because I'm a firm believer you need to start saving for your retirement by the time you are at least 25. And so I was trying to think, well, how much would they want to be able to retire on? What is the amount? What is necessary? Now, bear in mind, we are talking about graduates here. So I'm not going to go very low on the retirement savings, but I've actually done two lots of figures, and I've given you an idea. If you would like to retire, let's say 30,000 rand a month, which is not a lot. So here I'm expecting that perhaps in a typical marriage, he would have 30,000 rand and she would also be saving towards 30,000 to give them at least a fair amount of income when they retire. So we're talking about one person here saving for 30,000. If a 25-year-old starts to save and wants to retire by the age of 65 with 30,000 rand a month, and 30,000 in today's value, 30,000, and I'm going to assume they then live until about 95. So they're going to, in other words, they're going to provide their own income for 30 years. They need to start with saving just over 7,000 rand a month. Sure. So that's your very, very basics. And all it's going to get you is 30,000 rand a month, which is, of course, not a lot of money. I did the same figures again. I said, maybe this person who's a graduate wants to retire with, say, 45,000 rand a month, which I think is a little bit more realistic. And for that, you need to be saving at least about 10,500 rand a month. And, of course, when I say 10.5, I mean that must then, until you are age 65, increase by 6% per year. And made the assumption that the capital is going to grow by 10% per year. So quite a number of assumptions I'm using in there, but the point is that it's a lot of money that you've got to take out of your measly little income that you actually get in. So that takes us from that 22 that we spoke of as fairly basic. Now we can put on, say, another 10,000 rand or so for retirement savings.
We're now on 32,000. Now, keep in mind that we said that the BCom graduate's taking home 26,000. So already we're looking well over that amount, okay?
Yeah.
So what else? Okay, that's retirement. Really important to start young. But medical cover, insurance, I mean, those are things we also need.
So, you know, you're fairly basic. I'm going to call it hospital plans, okay? I'm not going to mention any companies or anything. The fairly basic hospital plans through a medical scheme are costing in the region of about 2,500 rand a month, sort of thing, for an individual, which is an incredible amount of money. Ideally, one does want to be part of a medical scheme, but it's a little bit of a way out here. If your finances cannot afford it, you can consider medical insurance. Okay. Medical insurance is never going to cover you for the amount that a medical scheme as such is going to cover you for, but it is there essentially if something really bad goes wrong, you're in an accident or something like that. That is the sort of cover we're looking for. So, and individual insurance for that sort of thing is probably in the region of 600 or 700 rand a month. So a phenomenal difference between 2,500 rand a month, bring it down to 600 or 700 rand a month. So that is definitely an option that one can look at. Because, of course, when we talk about medical schemes nowadays, even then, they don't cover anything near what they should cover. So you should be looking at gap cover as well. So by the time you've taken 2,500 rand for your medical scheme, plus your gap cover at 350 to 500 rand, you're looking at 3,000 rand just on the medical side of things. Okay, and that is why sometimes with people on a smaller income, we'll actually looking at medical insurance. Mm. It's a little bit different. I still want to encourage you, when you get to the age of 35, you need to be on a medical aid. Otherwise, you're going to have a penalty for the rest of your life.
I think that's such an important point to make, actually. People don't realize that if you now get to 35, you're now going to start a family and you decide, well, especially if you're a woman, you're going to have a baby, you're going to have all those costs. People now say, well, let me get on to a medical scheme. The medical schemes are allowed to apply a late joining penalty. Is that only after the age of 35?
That's correct. It's after the age of 35. And basically, it happens to everybody. So you might have gone and worked in London for a couple of years and been on the NHS or something like that. You come back to South Africa, sorry, you're going to have a late joiner penalty. There is one exclusion where generally don't see late joiner penalties. And this is something very important, is when people take it out through group benefits. So in other words, if you work for one of these big companies that offers group benefits, in most cases, if they put you onto their medical scheme, medical aid, another word for it, okay, you'll find that there's no late joiner penalty. So that is another reason why it's actually quite good to work for a company which has got benefits. And even if you work for a smaller company, maybe 10 people in the company, if your company doesn't offer group benefits, meet the financial planner, introduce the financial planner to the boss as such and say, we want group benefits. It's not necessarily going to cost the company anything because it's still going to be coming essentially off what you're earning, but it becomes cost to company and the taxation is different. And of course, then you can benefit through things such as getting onto a medical scheme without a late joiner penalty. Also, your group benefits like life cover, like income protection, you don't necessarily have to have a medical test done. So you might have a problem with health. Maybe it's you're a diabetic or you've got kidney problem or whatever the case is. Under normal circumstances, if you tried to take out life cover or income protection in your personal space, you'd have to go through medicals and they're going to probably say, no, we're not going to give you cover for that, or we're going to reduce your cover, or we're going to charge you more. Since you go through group benefits, you don't have that problem. So it is actually better and generally speaking, a little bit cheaper to go through group benefits as well.
I think, and it's so interesting you say all of this, because I get a lot of young graduates saying to me they're actually upset because the companies have these benefits, which they are compulsory, they have to join. So their take pay is now slashed by the medical aid, by the retirement, by the life cover, and they feel they don't necessarily need these things. But of course, you do need them, because you don't need them until you need them. And then when you need them, you really need them. So it is important to understand that this is part of adulting. It's part of being, of growing up, of being financially independent, I suppose.
Yeah.
And the other one that I know you put in the budget here is, now, I mean, already we've blown the budget. So we're really struggling, but, you know, income protection. So, you know, you spoke about group benefits. And obviously, if I work for a company, that's absolutely fine, because if something happens to me and I can't work for a few months, they may be able to cover it. But the biggest risk a young person, of course, risks is future income. If something happens to me as a young person and I will never be able to work again, we don't need life insurance when we're young. We actually need income protection.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an interesting point, because, you know, a lot of people come to me and they say, oh, you've given us all these ideas, but we can't afford them all. And absolutely. I mean, I realize that we can't all afford them all. So what is the most important insurance to have? And I'm going to say the first thing to have is to make sure you've got a good medical scheme. Okay. Because if you get hit by that proverbial bus and you end up in 3 or 4 days worth of ICU, how are you going to afford that? Okay. So number one, medical scheme. Number two, and really following on very closely from the medical scheme, is I want to say is income protection. Okay. Forget about the life cover and all that sort of thing. Income protection. And that's to protect your income. So that if you can't work, at least you're going to get an income. We'll say the age of 65 or something like that. Because the point is, how are you ever going to save for retirement? How are you ever going to buy a property? How are you ever going to live on a monthly basis if you don't have your income? So that is why it is so, so vital to have income protection. It's going to cover you through to least, I would say, what is considered retirement age, which is normally around about 65.
So we've got all of these things. And of course, you've also got very important, and we should probably mention this straight up, you put 1,000 rand a month for emergency cover, emergency fund. I'm a huge believer in emergency funds for life happens. And I would imagine that if you look over any 3 months within your, say 3 to 6 months of every year, you had some unexpected expense. So that 1,000 rand a month, putting it away into building an emergency fund, really, really important.
Yeah. The thing with an emergency fund is people often say, but how much? And of course, you can read 10 books and you're going to get 10 different answers as to how much should actually go into an emergency fund. I'm of the belief that absolute minimum, 3 months worth of income, absolute minimum. It would be nice if you had at least 6 months, but you know what? Let's be realistic. To have a year's worth of income is most people not exactly going to happen. Got to be realistic about it. So then it's a case of, well, how much do I really need from in my lifestyle for an emergency fund? Just in the statistic here, that the more electronic goods or items you have in your possession, the higher you need your emergency fund to be. So for example, if you live in a house and you've got a swimming pool pump and you've got electric fencing and you've got an electric all those sorts of things, high automation, there's more to go wrong. And those are the things that cost a lot to repair. So more automated as such your home is, more your emergency fund needs to be.
Love that. You know, everyone wants an automated home. It's got it, and you forget these things do break, and those are the costs. So you've got more to break down basically than someone else. So the other option, of course, is not to have all the automated stuff, and then your emergency fund could be smaller, and it'll cost you, it'll save you money not buying all the automated stuff. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
No, I don't know about you, but I mean, how many times is the swimming pool pump up on us? Every second year, it feels like, we need a new pool pump, or we need, you know what I mean? Or the gate's not working or something. And you, each time you call out an electrician, it's at least R1,000 just for his call out fee, let alone everything else.
So I think obviously, hopefully this graduate that we're talking about at this stage is renting, so they may not have all those sorts of costs. But of course, there's still car breaks down. Even if you have a medical cover, sometimes there are things that are not covered by the medical cover. Many, many graduates are also supporting family, extended family. So that emergency fund, really, really important. But now we just, you know, when I add up now and I look at, I think we're on about 37,000 now in terms of we add everything that we wanted to put into this. So remember, we started off with a BCom graduate earning 26,000 after tax, and we're sitting at a high specialized degree sitting at maybe 41,000 after tax. We're pretty close now to that specialist degree. And we have not, by the way, bought a house yet. We're only renting. So this is the next question is, I get so many young people who say, I'm behind the curve because I haven't bought a house, I haven't got this, I haven't got that. You know, getting ready for home ownership and doing these numbers is incredibly important. But, you know, how much do we need? What are we looking at? You said up front, a property for $1.5 million, that's a little apartment. You're looking at what, 16,000 odd repayments, plus, of course, you'll have levies, all of those, maybe another 1,500. So that property ownership's costing you about 17,000, call it 18,000, let's round it up, 18,000. Okay, you won't have to pay the 10,000 rand rent, but that's adding another 8,000 onto this bill of ours, this growing bill.
Yes.
So we, I mean, when I add all of that up, if you want, you're a young graduate or you're a graduate, you want to start building up things. If you want the house, the car, you want to be saving for your future. You're obviously just covering the basics around food and all of that. You need 45,000 a month. That's actually what the number is, 45,000 a month. We can't have it all. That's quite a number.
Yeah. So in fact, I think, you know, what a lot of people do is when they come to see me, they say to me, I want to buy a house. Am I ready to buy a house? And tell you what I do generally is I like to, over a one-year period, work out whether they're ready to buy a house. And I'm going to explain to you how I do that. So say, for example, you would like to buy a house, and it's a little townhouse. It's going to cost you 1.5 million rand. Now, those are even rare to find. Not a lot, but there are some available at 1.5 million rand. So we know a repayment of a 1.5 million rand house is about 16,000 rand a month over a 20-year period. So imagine if you are busy renting a flat, and the flat is costing you 10,000 rand a month to rent. So we know that every month you are essentially paying 10,000 rand there. Now you're short of that 6,000 rand. What I recommend to my clients to come to see me is take 6,000 rand addition and put it into almost like a savings account every month, okay, for a whole year. Because that means essentially it's the same as your home loan repayment would be. So you are now paying 16,000 rand a month. If you can do that for a whole year without touching that 6,000 rand per month, then it means you've been able to afford a home loan of 16,000 rand a month. Of course, the beautiful bonus of that is that at the end of that 1 year, you're going to have a bit of money saved. And that can be used perhaps towards a transfer cost, your moving cost, maybe doing some work, like doing some work in the bathroom or the kitchen or whatever the case is. A little bit of money. So it is one way to do it.
Yeah.
The other thing that I like to suggest, that when you do buy a place to live in, I always recommend you try your best to buy at least a two-bedroom place. And my reasoning for this is because even if you're a young single person, second bedroom, you rent it out. Just for a couple of years, perhaps before you get married, maybe 3 or 4 years, where you can perhaps get in 4 or 5,000 rand a month. And what you do is obviously towards your bond. So there's a bit of income coming in just to help with those bond repayments, especially in the beginning. Because remember, bond repayment is 16,000 rand a month when you start. It's going to stay, as long as interest rates stay the same, it's going to stay at 16,000 rand a month. Your income is going to be getting higher and higher and higher. Hopefully, it should be. And therefore, you're going to become more and more affordable for you to be able to pay 16,000 rand a month.
Absolutely. And I think that is the one, huge benefit, obviously, of actually owning a home as opposed to paying rent. So yes, in the beginning, you've got this massive jump between maybe the 10,000 rand a month rental and the 16,000 rand bond repayment. But over time, it becomes your rental would be going up by, you know, 10% every year, whereas your bond repayments remain the same. So it is something, but I do think people need to be very aware that they're not going to land up in a situation where they enter home ownership. Oh, Kirsty, the other one is all those transaction fees. People don't realize that there's property tax, there's origination fees on the home loan, there's conveyancing fees, there's, I mean, boy, do their banks and lawyers make a lot of money out of buying.
Absolutely.
Loans. It's a huge, huge that business. That's
why it's important. You've got to have some money saved.
Yeah.
That's got to have some money saved.
And I think also, Kirsty, just one of the other things that we have not got in here at all is debt repayments. So we're not talking about paying off personal loans and credit cards. So we're just saying those are just not even in these numbers.
Those mustn't even enter into your mind. Really, really, really. The longer one can stay away from things like credit cards, into store debt, just don't. Mm. As simple as that. Just don't. Mm.
Absolutely. So I think this is really, I've really enjoyed what you've put together here, because I hope we haven't left the listeners sort of feeling like, what's the point? I'll never have any money. I mean, whoa, it's so tough. But more to also think strategically. Don't just because you're now getting the salary and you think you're suddenly you're wealthy, actually not yet. Your career, you're a graduate, your career is going to grow, it's going to build, you're going to earn more money in the future, but don't sabotage yourself and your future finances by going and now buying the 400,000 rand car, rushing into home ownership, you know, taking out credit card debt, all of those things, because that is what's actually going to set you back. We're rather like focus exactly like you said on building up some of the retirement funding now. So you've got that compounding, you've got all these things growing for you. You can do so much good for your future self by deciding how you're going to use those first paychecks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we don't want to make it sound too depressing. We're just giving the facts. But what it does make me realize when I look through these figures is that it does help. Perhaps if you buy your home with somebody else, okay, your partner or spouse or whatever it is, so that you can actually share those costs, because that makes a phenomenal difference. Even things like your Wi-Fi, if you're only paying half the Wi-Fi in comparison to the full amount, it's going to make a big difference. I mean, it costs the same to run the electricity for a two-bedroom house, whether there's one person or two people in the house. So it certainly does help if you can be doing it with somebody else. One of the things that I think is also important to look at is when you're actually trying to decide whether we are ready for this, you need to look at what are interest rates at the time. Okay. Now, I think Maya, you and I have been around for a long time. I remember in 1998 when I was involved with my first home loan, interest rates went up to like 25%.
Yep. I bought my first home when it went up to 25%. I remember that.
It was a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. And I think what's important is to work out what your home loan repayments will be as it stands at the moment, but also work out what will you be able to afford that same home loan repayment if interest rates have gone up by 3, 4, 5%. Otherwise, we'd see homes being repossessed. And we don't want that. We don't want that to happen to anybody that we know.
I do think that there's a huge advantage to buying property now for this exact reason. We are at the peak of an interest rate cycle. And what very sadly we saw happening was that when the rates were cut so aggressively during COVID, people rushed out and bought. They said, oh, property is now affordable, without thinking, because I wrote so many articles warning people saying this is a false interest rate. It's not going to stay here. It is going to go up. And we are seeing so many people facing repossession, facing financial difficulty because they made their financial assessments based on the 7%, you know, prime rate. And I don't think we're going to be going back there for a long time, but I do think we can say with a fair amount of accuracy that we're probably at the peak. You know, if you can afford the interest rates now, you probably will be able to afford it. We're unlikely to see another 3-4% interest rate increases from here. So I think it's not a bad time to actually consider ownership. But I love what you said about sharing. And I think that is one of the things we're going to see, a big shift we're going to see with young people going forward, is that they will have to live in community shared living spaces. Now, whether that's a love interest person that you're going to live with or somebody that you friends that you just share with. I actually met some young woman from Japan recently, and they In Japan, everybody does shared living, but that is how you live. No one can afford to live on their own. And they have actually blocks where kitchens are shared between five people. You know, there's shared living spaces, shared amenities. You just have your bedrooms. And I think it'd be interesting to see that kind of build coming up in the future, sort of young people's sort of apartments and that are built around that, where you can, exactly as you're saying, share all of these running costs, the living costs. If you're sharing them, you have a lot more money for entertainment.
Yes, well, exactly. And what I've seen really can work quite well, especially for young graduates. They can be friends, no romance between the two of them, can literally find a place together, live in that place for a couple of years. And then when they're kind of ready to move off and go into maybe a bigger home or with their future spouses or partners, they can keep that original house between the two and rent it out as like a almost like a little business. So there are opportunities, definitely for friends to be buying together and saving on costs. So I think there's definitely ideas you can do around that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's been really insightful. I think it is quite shocking to me that you kind of need, basically, if you want a little entry-level car, entry-level home, food on the table. I mean, not even, I think we put in 1,500 rand a month for entertainment, and you're doing the right things in terms of medical cover, retirement. You're looking at 45,000 a month. That's actually the number. So again, it doesn't have to be the number. There are ways to work around it. There are things you may have to live without, but you know, and maybe it's shared living, but I think this is the number that we were looking for. Yeah. And I think that gives us all a little bit of a reality check, Kirsty. So thank you.
I think also let's just give some people some encouragement. We've just been talking about basic salaries when you first get into the workplace. And I can tell you, if you're well qualified, your salary is going to move up, 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 up. Eventually you'll laugh, think, gosh, I wish I could go back to only having expenses of 45,000 rand a month. Because your salary's gone up. And when our salaries go up, that's when we do spend more money, and they will go up.
Brilliant point to end on there, Kirsty, because that is the key thing, right? The higher the salary, the bigger expenses. So if you can actually learn from a young age to live on a budget and to have a plan, then the money that you will, the future earnings that you'll have, you'll be able to manage them properly and actually maximize them, rather than just landing up one day, waking up and say, how did I get here? How did I get into the state? Why am I sitting with a 10 million rand home and all the associated running costs? So yeah, actually brilliant point to end on. And thank you.